coming, he ought to make it by then. Maybe he'll look around himself and say, guess it's time for the judgment day. In the year 8510, God is gonna shake his mighty leg. He'll either say, I'm pleased where man has been, or tear it down and start again. Oh, oh. In the year 95, I'm kinda wondering if man is gonna be alive. He's taken everything this old earth can give, and he ain't put back nothing. Whoa, whoa. Now it's been 10,000 years. Man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through, but through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday.
We're back to PMP Network, and that's Life with Mark Snyder. And with us right now is a special guest for me, because I remember in 1969, a song coming out that just the first time I heard it, it just captivated my imagination. And I went out and bought the single of the RCA copy of In the Year 2525, which I still have here in my collection, from Zager and Evans. The song became a huge national hit. It was number one for 6 weeks, and actually was the top song of 1969. And here with us right now is Denny Zager, half of Zager and Evans at the time. Hi, Denny. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
You know, it's amazing, no matter what you do, everybody will always say, the year 2525. They'll always mention that in the same breath as you.
I'll never live it down as long as I live.
And I don't think so. I mean, it was such a huge hit. And the interesting thing about that song was that it actually predicted the future. I mean, one of the items in there was, you won't need no husband, won't need no wife. You'll pick your son, pick your daughter, too, from the bottom of a long glass tube. Test two babies before they were born.
Yeah, we had a lot of predictions in there. Some of them have come true, naturally. Others haven't, but it's on the right track.
It sure is, yeah. It's amazing that it was so on. Now, that song actually was written by Rick...
Rick Evans, right.
Rick Evans was around...
I arranged it. We just worked as a team that way.
Yeah, but he actually wrote that in, like, 1964, didn't he?
Many years before. In fact, he put it in front of his group that he was working with at the time, and they listened to it and say, no, this won't work. So he stuck it back in the bag.
Wow.
And then many years later, we were on stage in Nebraska, is where we got our start, actually. And we were looking for up-tempo songs, and he pulled it out of the bag again and played it. And I thought, well, it's an up-tempo song. What the heck? We'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
And before long, everything was happening with it.
What was that like? I've always imagined, and I guess any musician would imagine just having that happen. Overnight, you guys were huge. And in fact, there's a very, very funny story that you've told me that I want you to repeat for my listeners. Talk about the Woodstock situation and what happened
than
Woodstock.
Naturally, nobody knew what Woodstock was going to be. It was just a thing in the park. It was just weird. And our managers said, well, that's a freebie. No way can you do it for nothing. They had one of the top duos in the country. We had the, you know, big hit going and the whole thing. So they said, no way, Jose, that you're going to do that for free. So, excuse me, we backed off, and we just watched the whole thing go on, and everybody was astounded as to what happened.
Hmm.
And so very basically, we were supposed to play Woodstock, but we never did.
And instead, you opened for who?
Engelbert Humperdinck at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles. It was a strange time. And the really weird thing about that hit record, we were just putting some statistics together for the website just recently here. And there's a list of 200 songs of all-time hits from the very beginning, even way back in the days of Bill Haley and Rock Around the Clock and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this list goes all the way up till now. And that stupid song, even though we only had one hit, that stupid song took 89 out of that list, and the only two artists in front of us were Presley and the Beatles. We which was really strange.
Wow.
I'm just, that's truly a one-hit artist.
Well, yeah, I guess that, you know, that brings the question that I'm sure all my listeners are wondering as well. I mean, here you were with RCA, which was a huge conglomerate, still is. They had enough promotional power to push the song into number one position. What happened to follow-ups? What ever happened to that?
Well, we were like a lot of other artists. We tried to follow it up, and we did. We followed it up with a couple things, and they got on the charts just a little bit, and they just fizzled out. And very basically, to make a long story short, that hit was so strange and it was so huge that it dwarfed any and everything around it. It's like you've just put out a movie called The Wizard of Oz, and now what do you follow it up with?
Mm-hmm.
And it was that strange and that huge. And for years and years, we kicked ourselves. Why couldn't we do that? But as I look back, I think it was a very simple political science that took place. It was just such a monster that we couldn't have followed it with anything, I don't think.
You guys stayed around together for a little while, but I guess you broke up around 74?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. What was it? Was it frustrating trying to get that hit again? Or what was it that actually ended up breaking you guys up?
Well, for one, we were kind of disagreeing on the musical taste category. I was leaning more of probably in the classical direction as far as the kind of taste that I wanted to get into as far as the music I wanted to play, and he was leaning more probably towards rhythm and blues, categories like that.
Mm.
And there's nothing really wrong with that. It's just it just creates a real tough working atmosphere, and you don't agree on what you want to do and where you want to go. And there was always a somewhat of a conflict also there as far as just personality conflict, but other than that, you know. Nothing was happening, so we split and went our separate directions. So.
Interesting you mentioned about personality conflict, because you look at Simon and Garfunkel, and obviously they had the same situation.
Well,
but when the hits are coming, though, the personality conflict seemed to be overlooked a little bit more.
Well, sure, I mean, because there's millions of dollars involved. But I think that's very normal. It's just groups become like a family. I mean, you eat, sleep, and drink with these people, and they become like brothers or sisters, things like that. And a lot of people don't relate. I mean, the greatest groups in the world, you know, the Beatles broke up. You know, I mean, the very best of them break up for these reasons. And that's one of the reasons why I got into the style that I'm doing now. In fact, it was the main reason, because I had trouble agreeing with other people, and I wanted to go my own direction. And this style that I play now allows me to be basically the one-man band. I can do what I want when I want, and I can do my art form, you know, have the freedom to choose what I want to do.
Hmm. Now, without commercial restraints, you can pretty much do what you want to do. What do you think the Internet has contributed to all this type of stuff?
Well, for me, it's fantastic, because I've been looking for a vehicle to push this style for a long time, and the style that I've been working on for years now it's really quite sophisticated, and it takes some room on any advertising situation to get this across. And naturally, the website to me is like, it's like a giant want ad, you know. I mean, you can put any and everything on there, and so it's a fantastic way to get out there. Of course, nowadays, the way things are going, a lot of the ways is your website becomes kind of a fancy business card.
That's true. And, of course, the website for Denny Zager is Zager Guitar, GUITAR.com. And on the site, as soon as you click on, you'll hear in the year 2525.
That's it.
You know, I didn't realize this until studying some of the materials on your website and stuff, that actually you and Rick recorded that song on your own, with your own money, on a label called Truth, and gave the copies out to the DJs around Lincoln, Nebraska, where you guys were from.
Yeah, right. Now, it wasn't even our own money. We borrowed $500 to do it. That gives you an idea where we were at the time.
Wow.
And we started selling it over the bar in the nightclub that we were in, and we pulled a trick that worked pretty well. That bar was doing advertising on the radio, And so they needed some music to go behind the advertisement, so we put a little clip of 25.
Uh-huh.
And people started hearing it, and they called in and said, well, can you play the whole thing? And so they started playing the whole thing, and that's where everything happened.
That's a great idea, see that?
Yeah.
And now, so this was your own money. You guys took a shot. With the version that RCA later recorded, was it a different version or the same exact song?
It's the same version, except they went in and remixed it just a little bit. They built the voice just a little bit more, because back then words were real important. And it was in the time of the war situation and everything,
right.
and protest songs, you know, the whole bit. That was back in those times. And so the words were really important. So all they did, they left the orchestra exactly the same and pushed up the voice just a little bit. And that was done in a little town called Odessa, Texas, believe it or not.
Hmm.
Just a little podunk village out in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
Kind of a oil drilling area, from as I recall.
Huh. It's interesting, I mean, because that version, of course, became huge, but I would assume that people who own the copy on the Truth Records, that must be a collectible at this point.
Very, very collectible, because we only put, I think, 500 of those out, and that was in Lincoln, Nebraska. So, and up to date, I think we've sold, it's still in the gold series, somewhere probably pretty close to 10 million, something like that. And naturally, if you would consider that up against today's record-buying public, back then we didn't have a tenth of what we've got as far as the record-buying public nowadays. If we had a hit in that same perspective, I mean, it would be a monster like it was back then.
Right, exactly. That's interesting. We're talking with Mr. Zager and from the Denny Zager from Zager and Evans, and it's an amazing story. And you, of course, have never really left the music biz. You're a teacher. You actually make guitars. You're really into the business.
Well, this is kind of a culmination of about 30, 35 years of work for me in two different areas. I just visited the Martin plant in Nazareth, Pennsylvania, which was probably really exciting to me because, I mean, you see every part of a guitar, you know, go together. At the time I was there, they had a couple guitars they were building for Eric Clapton. I mean, they built guitars for the best in the world. And basically, I went down there to present my string science to them. And I'm in the process. This is a situation where I set up a guitar, and it basically plays 60 to 75% easier than it does from the factory. And I've had some tremendous success with it with my students. I literally rework all the guitars for my students. And for people that don't have a lot of strength, like beginners and so forth, it's like a power steering on your car. You just barely have to press the string down to get it to play this way. And it works great for beginners that way, but for professionals, it makes you much faster. Nowadays, I work a three-hour thing, and I perform all by myself with an acoustic guitar for three 45-minute sets, which is really difficult to do to get a, varied sound enough to keep people interested for 3 hours. And I used to work do a vocal thing, because voice is actually my main bag, but the instrumental thing has been a very exciting direction. And with this string science that I got going for me and the original style now, I do anything from Bach and Beethoven to Eric Clapton to most styles are in many cases limited to one part of an orchestra, meaning a lead line, a chord structure, a bass, or something like that. But this does all, it does actually about six parts at the same time. If you tune into the website, that'll all be explained and everything.
Wow.
But, so, I play full arrangements. I'll take a brand new song. I've got any of the new ones, Faith Hill, Breeze. I worked up a version of that just very recently. It's coming on real strong. It's got all the orchestration parts. It's got the lead line, chord structure, bass, rhythm. If you listen to the song, it's basically like the one that was recorded by Faith Hill, but it's done instrumentally, and it's all on one guitar. So it's a real exciting angle.
Wow. We've had a ton of emails when we advertised you were going to be here, and I'll ask some of the questions that they've asked, actually. One of them actually wanted to know if where you're going to be playing, if there's any place that they can actually see you playing guitar, and also if you're taking students.
Yeah, I'm very definitely taking students, although I limit my number of students because I want to spend more time with each individual. I teach primarily to do my research, not for the money, because there's not a lot of money in teaching. And naturally, the knowledge and the stuff that I attain from that, I use in the publishing and so forth. As far as where I'm playing and so forth, I actually live in Plano, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas. And I play around some of the local coffee houses, Starbucks coffee, things like that, to stay in shape. I don't really want to go on the road. It's not a big front show or anything. Very basically, all it is it's like a piano bar with a guitar, and it's a very neat setting. The way it comes off, very laid back. And I just do it to stay in shape. I do it probably every other weekend, something like that. You know, if a good musician doesn't play all the time, they don't stay in shape. So I'm constantly researching and everything, and my students are part of that research edge. And this style, I think, it already has. It's changed the form of guitar playing. Well, most guitar players, they just play a lick or they play rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
But very seldom, probably less than 5% of guitarists out there do the whole arrangement, because it's hard to do. But in this style, I've simplified it down to, you know, pulled it way down in simplification, so it's feasible, you know, for the average guitarist. So I've got total beginners on my roster. I've got 35-year players. As far as the string science, last summer I think I worked probably 10 or 15 guitars, $8,000 and more. So when you're working on an instrument like that, you have to watch what you're doing. I've got a Martin D41. It's 35, 40 years old now. It's worth upwards of $28,000, so that gives you an idea. A good luthier stands to lose much more than they stand to gain, which explains why there aren't a lot of good luthiers around. But it's a very interesting field. I've always been into sciences and things like that, and I've always wanted my instrument to play easier. Very basically, I set up a utopia where the guitar player just has a ball playing on stage. And I would do it whether I got paid for it or not. I mean, most good musicians are that way. Fortunately, there is some money involved. So.
Well, this person who asked where you played also wanted to know if when you do play in concert, even in your acoustics, that's do you do 25-25?
Amazingly enough, I don't. For one, I'm burned out on the song to a degree, but I always pick songs that lend themselves the best to the instrument. I can do a version of it, but I haven't really played it much. I don't know. It falls in the lists of classics that I do, and I can do it, and I can play a version of it, but it's probably not one of my greatest things that I do on guitar. Some things just lend themselves better to a particular instrument, and as an artist, I'm extremely picky on what I do and so forth.
So when you're playing, you bill yourself as Denny Zager.
Correct.
So are there people there who recognize the name and say, are you related to that guy that did? They mostly know you by now.
The name Zager, it went down with the hit, but if somebody says in the year 2525, everybody, I mean just virtually everybody knows that there's not a place, you know, that I can go that people wouldn't know that song. So it's always been a door opener, which is fortunate for right now, even like, you know, me pushing this style as we speak here. So it's been an advantage, but I suppose it's been much worse than that on the private life part. A lot of times I don't even tell people who I am because of that reason, because we're off on one subject then, which is me, which to me, I would rather learn about them, I guess. I don't know. I've never been much of a glory hound in that way.
Are you married or happy?
Well, I'm happy right now. Went through that game a couple times.
Yeah.
And things are working out. It's going a good direction. It's, as I said, both these things with the string science and the guitar style, I've worked on both of them for over 30 years now, and it's an exciting time because everything is coming together. I've got a good marketing person working on the style, and the website's going to be changing a great deal in the next month or two, and so... We're going great guns. I really can't complain.
Well, one of the emails came from Britain here, Great Britain, and it pretty much addresses the fact that they like your guitar style. They checked out your website. Obviously, they saw the link in our site, and he wants to know if any of the people from rock and roll are your pals, and if they have checked out your guitar stuff that you're doing. Any of the guitarists that in rock and roll.
Well, one of the closest people I was knew really quite well was probably John Denver, but needless to say, he's deceased at this point. But but as far as the real pals, it's kind of unusual because, I mean, like we worked on stage with groups like the Bee Gees, Fifth Dimension, Association, Engelbert Humperdinck, as I say, John Denver, and so forth. But but they always played their own thing, and we played our own thing, and then it was down the road. So we ran into these people, but we really didn't get to know them very well.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a thing like that. A lot of people think that the music business is all glitter and it's fun and games and so forth. But to be honest with you, I saw the inside of an airplane a lot and a lot of the hotel rooms. And that's where it's at.
Hmm.
So as far as the style, I don't know who is naturally tallying. On that category. So.
Now, someone else wrote and asked a question, which I can actually answer. They want to know where 2525 is located on CD, and I know that Rhino has a Billboard 1969 CD out that does have that in it. And if you know, is there a collection of your stuff as well somewhere?
Again, in this situation, the artist really doesn't have much to do with that. The original copy is owned by RCA Victor. It's the master, and they can sell it to whoever they want. So we as artists really have no idea. I have people say, oh, yeah, we saw you on, your song was advertised the other night and this and that. And I have no idea. I don't even follow it. It's kind of a strange situation, but that's the way it works.
So when Rhino sells their Billboard CD with the 1969 greatest hits on it, including in the year 2525, I assume that Rick must get a check because he wrote the song.
Right.
But
the publisher, there's publishing, which I should have had part of, very basically, I got railroaded out of it. I got paid for 2 years after the record. The songwriter gets paid
in perpetuity, right?
But the person that has the publishing on it makes a lot of money, and I should have had that. And very basically, I didn't get paid for anything. I mean, not much of anything. On it, so, which, needless to say, is a sore spot. But you get over it. It's a thing. I got the fame, but not the fortune in that direction.
Well, the fame helps too. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people will check out ZagerGuitar.com, and I'm sure people are very eager to learn your methods. Since you are a proven commodity in rock and roll and in music and also in other types of music, which I think is interesting. I mean, if they come to a concert, if they come to see Denny Zager, they're not going to see Zager and Evans. They're going to see Denny Zager doing music that's Denny Zager's music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's been hard lately, too, because, you know, it's like an actor does one movie like Superman is known for Superman. That's what he's known for, and they screencast him as that, and they don't let him out of there.
Hmm.
And it's kind of a tough thing. I mean, 25 was a monster hit, and everybody knows me for it, and for that reason, naturally, they come to see Zager and Evans, and when they don't see the duo, then and that's hard for me because I'm way, way past that. I've gone to many other fields now, far beyond that.
Hmm.
So,
do you ever think about commercial charts, or is that like you don't care about it anymore?
You mean cutting again?
Yeah, a Billboard.
Oh, definitely. This promoter and marketing expert that I got working now, we probably have a making of an album instrumentally.
Yeah.
The voice thing, I don't know about the voice thing, but this guitar style has become really a tremendous thing in my life. It's a way of speaking your musical ideas, and it's not just a voice, it's not just words. I mean, it is. I do Bach and Beethoven. I can go way back and do things on the guitar of the masters that have never been done on guitar before.
Hmm.
And that, to me, is out on the cutting edge. It's extremely exciting to me. So.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. You never know the way the music scene's going to go. One day it can go punk and rap. The next day it can go back to the old classics. So you may be riding the crest of a new wave.
You never know out there. That's the scary part about the record and music industry. But that's the way it is, and you learn to roll with the punches.
Mm. Denny Zager, thanks so much for coming on PNPnetwork.com, and also we want to remind you to go visit Denny's site. It's Zager, Z-A-G-E-R, guitar.com, and you can check it out. And don't forget, if you want to go get the Billboard 1969 Rhino version, it has In the Year 2525, which was, there was one other song that was just about as popular that year, also was number one 6 weeks or 7 weeks, and also was on the charts quite a few weeks. That was Let the Sunshine in Aquarius by Fifth Dimension that year. That was a big one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Denny, but for me, at least, and it may be the age thing, I'm not sure, but I look at music of the mid to late 60s and early 70s, and I can't see any other decade that's come close to the kind of quality of those decades. And it could be because of the fervent anti-war thing. It could be, you know, because of the passion that was during that time. I'm not sure. Maybe the drugs. I don't know.
Well, what's really interesting with me now, I see all kinds of students. I have students, oh, a few of them younger, 12 and 15, so forth, but a good share of them are older, too. But these younger students come in, and they don't play the music of this time. They play the music of that time. And
mm-hmm.
I think that says a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's like a Rolls Royce. It's built to go forever. And an art form, a Van Gogh painting, will always be a Van Gogh painting. And I don't care if it's 150 years old. And to me, music is that exact same way. And regardless when it was put out, of course, the words can be dated and so forth. But still, it's a genuine art form of that individual artist and that time. And you can't replace that.
Yeah, I was at a party the other day with a 17-year-old young lady, and she was playing the Beatles' one album, which, you know, this is like that and the Doors, all the stuff's new music to these kids.
Yes, it is. It's very exciting.
It is interesting. Well, Denny, thanks so much for coming on, and keep in touch.
It's been a pleasure being here.
Take care.
Thanks for inviting.
Bye-bye.
Bye.